Welcome. This is another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. You can find out more at the website allbook-books.com. Today is the book launch interview. Janet A. Werner's book, A Pear in an Apple Tree, A Journey with Multiple Sclerosis. The artwork is by Kyle Horn, H-O-R-N-E, and it's 220 pages, 6x9. It's got large print because, as Janet mentions in the book, for people with MS, get books with large print easier on the eyes, especially if you have vision issues. That's why I wanted the larger print in this book. That's in one of her chapters called Helpful Hints. In her bio, Janet Amelia Werner has a Bachelor of Science in Geology from Southampton College on Long Island and a Master of Science in Geology Earth Sciences from Northern Arizona University. As an educator for almost 40 years, she has traveled extensively to all 50 states and many countries. Her life experiences and love of science have stimulated the minds of young people and adults, encouraging them to appreciate and admire the wonders of nature. She has won numerous awards and accolades, including National Multiple Sclerosis Society Mother of the Year Long Island Chapter, Who's Who Among America's Teachers, Dowling College News 12 Long Island Educator of the Month, SCOPE, S-C-O-P-E, Teacher Service Award, Edwin D. Miller Civilian Service Award, Suffolk County Police Historical Society, and the Suffolk County Police Historical Society Heritage Award. She is a member of the Long Island Writers Guild and has been involved with many Long Island organizations. Her journey with multiple sclerosis has taken her to new places and new people, making life's journey quite exciting. She lives with her husband, Ernest, on Long Island. And the graphic artist Kyle Horn has a Bachelor of Arts in Visual Communications from SUNY Old Westbury College on Long Island. And his artwork has been displayed in libraries and schools. And he's with various book writer and illustrator organizations. And he has some very nice uplifting drawings in the book to complement the uplifting attitude as Janet addresses quite serious topic. So please give a listen with a good open heart mind, and you will, along with perhaps getting energized from hearing Janet talk, you will also learn a lot. So thank you for listening. Welcome, Janet A. Werner, to Get Lit with Literature. It's wonderful to have you on to discuss your new book, your first book, congratulations, A Pear in an Apple Tree, A Journey with Multiple Sclerosis. So there's a lot of stuff to cover. But first off, how do you feel with your first book?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to do this interview. I appreciate that. And thank you very much for helping me publish this. It's pretty exciting. It's been a journey of almost 4 years, and didn't think it would come to this, but I'm so excited about it.
Wow, I lost track of time. I know we worked on it a lot, but I didn't realize. Well, you started writing it before we started working on it, right. So maybe that's part of the 4 years. But yeah, it takes there's a lot of work behind the scenes people don't realize sometimes. So there's a lot to the book. Some of the things I love about it are that you know your sense of humor, and you have such a good positive, realistic but positive attitude for people. So I think that whether you know somebody has MS or not, there's still an opportunity to be inspired by the book and by the stories. You have a couple of chapters where some other people get to share their stories and words of wisdom. So it's a lot, and it's very informative, because I didn't know much. I mean, I had a good friend, Richard Savatsky. I published a book of his poems 17 years ago, and I watched him deal with MS, but I didn't know a whole lot about the condition. So maybe you could either start off with, it was, gosh, like 35 years ago, you had some intense first experiences before you were diagnosed.
Yeah.
So maybe you could start off a little bit with that, and then kind of explain to people what the parameters are, because it's a different kind of condition or disease, as some people call it, because it's not a consistent, there's not a consistent symptoms or experiences, as you show in the book, and
meeting you, like when we meet, if I didn't know you, I would have no idea that you deal with MS.
Right. Yeah. It's all the symptoms are different for each person, and it just affects everyone differently. I list the things that I have going on in my book. The most common thread between all of us is the fatigue, the heaviness. Like I said, I was diagnosed almost 36 years ago, and it was kind of a shock. The only good thing about it, if I have to call it a good thing, was my coworker had MS, and she was describing her symptoms to me, which I couldn't believe what she was saying. And it just so happened that there happened to be a book published about MS, and I read it. And as I say in the book, it described me to a T. And I had taken off from work for 2 weeks and just slept for 2 weeks and, had a lot of difficulty. And then I was diagnosed through what was called an NMR, which now is called an MRI. And the word nuclear in nuclear magnetic resonance scared people. So they got rid of that word. But there's so many different symptoms. Heat is the thing that usually bothers me the most. And I have to say, I've got amazing support from my family. We have a word called Mizzy in our house, and my husband can tell right away when I'm having an exacerbation, as it's called. And he'll just give me, as I say in the book, marching orders to go and lay down. And I know that since retirement, I've been able to control things, getting enough sleep, good diet, exercise, and my book, I hope I help people. And the main thrust of the book was to have people with MS understand that they're just not alone. Sometimes when you're diagnosed with a condition like this, which is so different from other diseases, you feel like you're alone, and you just feel like nobody else can feel the way you're feeling. And then on the flip side, I'm hoping that people who don't have MS, or the non-MSers as I call them, will come away with a sense of compassion and education for those of us who have MS, because some of the symptoms people just can't believe. I was in the grocery store one day, I fell down, and I got this look from a woman who looked at me like I was drunk. And my husband turned to her and said, "Oh, I just push her down once a day, whether she needs it or not." And of course, the woman walked away thinking we're both crazy. But I think you have to have a sense of humor to deal with things. And again, the sense of humor and the support is what's carried me through on a lot of these bad days that I have.
Yeah, you mentioned teaching. Yeah, you taught while I forgot whether you were already teaching when you found out about the MS, but you were teaching what, earth sciences and geology specifically?
Yeah.
At a high school level, what grade? High school.
I taught high school science 9 through 12. I taught at Stony Brook and Southampton College, and that was early on, so I was able to to get through it. It was getting harder as I taught over the years. So it was almost 40 years in education, and I have to say I did some of the experiments with the kids to simulate MS symptoms when we were covering diseases, and the kids were great. We had a great time. They understood. They were compassionate. They told me stories about some of their relatives who had MS, and I was impressed with how compassionate they were, and of course they were educating me as well. It was a good experience. But then as the years went on, the MS symptoms really drained me, and I found that it was time to retire. And my body was telling me that it's time to, it's my time. I have to, reserve time for myself and my family. And you're always giving to everybody else when you're teaching. And this was a good experience to say, well, my body's telling me it's time. And I'm having a wonderful experience because you helped me with the book, which I never thought in my wildest dreams it would come to this. And then on my 70th birthday, I signed up for tap dance lessons and cello lessons, which I thought I would never, ever do. And it's been a fun journey.
It's being a fun journey for you as it continues, because that's part of the, I'm impressed that the energy that comes through the book is just your incessant interest in topics and activities and wanting to be busy and make the most of every day, which is certainly admirable. And I think that's important, whether someone's dealing with any kind of condition or disease or just any kind of mood, is to get outside oneself and be busy and have interests. And I think, you know, you'd mentioned the word alone, because that seems like a, whatever the condition, even if someone's just, it's just a mood, I think that's one of the biggest traps where people can get themselves in a funk, is to feel alone.
Exactly.
And I mean, one of my little word trick is that alone is also like all one, A-L-L. So immediately I think of, you know, oh yeah, there's trees and the bird just flew by and it's cold and I got to have some hot coffee, or it's hot and I want to have a cold drink. And so, you know, I'm not really alone. But of course, if dealing with, you know, the moods and emotions that arise when one is kind of in an altered state, in a way, with the symptoms, that obviously is more challenging. So maybe you can talk about how, like, some of your tips or some ways you've found to optimize your lifestyle, you know, to deal with the kind of challenges. It seems like they're not always predictable.
Right,
like, things
right.
just kind of happen sometimes, and you have to deal with them.
Right. It is an unpredictable disease, and as my husband said it, and he contributed to the book, he said, you know, you can't be a martyr. You can't go off and be alone, and you have to surround yourself with loved ones. We watch a lot of old movies, and we just laugh a lot in our house. We recite lines from old movies, and we're constantly, you know, laughing, and it's good. That's good medicine. Mm-hmm. And while my son was growing up, I was just so afraid that he was going to get the disease, because it is possible that he might get it. And being a parent was just so much fun. I just put my MS aside, and he was helping me do things. I was afraid that he was concentrating too hard on my MS, and I just realized that he was just being compassionate and wanting to help, as young people often do. And we just had a lot of fun. And when I found myself, you know, getting down in the doldrums, I would have to either just sit in my living room sometimes, which I'm surrounded with artifacts and pieces from my travels, and I just have to stop and say, I can do things even though I have MS, and I look around at, and all the blessings that have been given to me. I look at the photographs and the objects people have given to me, and it perks me up. Or I'll go sit at the beach, go to the park or the beach, and just sit there. And I have to learn to put my MS aside, because as they say, life is too short. And you really have to look at what's around you, even the simple things, even my husband making dinner, or, you know, trying a new recipe. You have to do different things, because again, life is too short, and you really have to appreciate what's around you and the people around you. I think we're just caught up, and I was caught up also when I was working, just caught up in things, and I had to stop and say, wait a minute, this is not what's supposed to be about. I have to, you know, stop and regroup and look at things differently. So for me, it's trying something new, or, you know, reading a new book. You put me onto several new books, which are wonderful, and I have a lot of friends who, you know, offer some new books. I'm volunteering with several organizations. One is called The Giving Doll, which is a fabulous organization. And we make dolls, handmade dolls, for children who are either in the hospital, or we send them to areas that have endured a natural disaster. Right now, we've made a little over 18,000 dolls, which have been sent to over 31 countries. That's rewarding. So you have to put your ailments aside, as they say. If you're doing for others, you're helping yourself as well.
What's the name of the organization again? With the,
it's called The Giving Doll.
The Giving Doll. Okay, that's wonderful.
The Giving Doll, right? The Giving Doll. And it's a wonderful organization. There's about 300 ladies. We meet once a week, sometimes once every 2 weeks, and we make these dolls. They're not allowed to be sold or raffled off. They must be given free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has a little task to do. So you're making these dolls, and you wonder what child is going to get the doll that you make. And it's very rewarding, and it keeps me focused and away from my MS.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot going on. That's an example of you know, how much energy you have and how active you are. So so people can understand better, and I have to remind myself too, the technical is something to do, the technical, like, definition of MS has to do with, like, the sclera and their nerves kind of attack, you know, each
right.
other or something. Can you explain
right.
that more clinically?
Sure. It's an autoimmune disease. And what happens is you, on your nerves and your body, you have these, it's a fatty layer. It's referred to as myelin, the myelin sheath. Mm-hmm. And everyone has them on their nerves, but sometimes people with MS, it's like stripping a wire, and you have that metal exposed on the wire. So if some of that myelin sheath, which is a fatty layer, if some of that is missing or damaged, trying to send signals to the brain is difficult or takes more time. So, for example, if I pick up a pen and you pick up a pen, it may take my body twice as much energy to do that as opposed to you. So that's why the fatigue comes in. A lot of people with MS experience the fatigue constantly because it takes their bodies longer to do a task and to send those signals to the brain to do that. And it affects people, obviously affects people differently. So when you have an MRI, I have white spots, which is called plaque or lesions in my brain. And depending upon where they are in the brain, it affects either your cognition or your mobility. I have sometimes what I call cog fog, and I just can't get the words out. I'm doing pretty well today. I can't get the words out, or I'll walk into the kitchen and I'll go, why did I just come in here? You know, so it's my husband teases me all the time that I'm doing it on purpose to ignore him. But
well, I think a lot of people do that. I don't know if it works for you. One of my tricks is I go back to where I was. Sometimes the thought is in the air. I mean,
right.
I've got to like walk into the kitchen and go, what? Oh, and then I go back to the other room and I'm like, oh yeah, I wanted a cookie.
Right. So, yeah. So it's that's basically it. It's mm-hmm. when that myelin sheath is not there or it's damaged. And the best thing about having the MS, I guess, if you want to call it that, is that the research, because of AIDS, lupus, chronic fatigue syndrome, all the other autoimmune diseases, there's such a great amount of research that's conducted, which will affect research for all these other diseases. So research is moving on at a pretty quick pace right now. And a lot of good news is there's a lot of medications out there for different types of MS, because there's different types. One is called relapse remitting, which means you have an episode or an exacerbation and then you get better. And then there are other types, secondary and progressive and so on. But like I said, it affects everybody differently. They're finding, unfortunately, juvenile MS now. But the research, I'm just very confident that the research is conducting at such a fast pace that it's helping people. Unfortunately, I can't take any of it. I was told by my neurologist that I can't. I'm actually too old, she said. I took prednisone for a short time, and she said, well, you're probably going to be depressed, and you're probably going to gain weight from the prednisone. Well, I was euphoric, and I lost 15 pounds. So it affects people differently. But I am too old. She said, I'm too old because the side effects when you're in your 70s are worse than than others. But I'm just very confident about the progression of the research. And the MS Society does amazing things with people and their needs, and they reach out to people, and there's so many resources to help people. So they really shouldn't feel alone in this journey, because there's so many avenues that people can follow to you know, whether it's a support group to make you feel good because you're not the only one who has MS. So it's encouraging. It's very encouraging.
And what's the, was the National Multiple Sclerosis Society?
National Multiple Sclerosis Society, and they publish a magazine called The Momentum. Mm-hmm. And what's good about it is they feature people's stories. So, you know, there's one lady who skis. There's one man who swims, one man who races, you know, foot races. Or jog. Like I said, it makes you feel comfortable that there are other people out there. And like I said, it's very encouraging.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And what I think you mentioned in the book about a million, is it a million people in the U.S. or worldwide?
It's way over a million. Yeah.
In the U.S. or worldwide?
I think it's in the U.S.
Okay.
It's in the U.S., yeah. And you know, like I said, the research is just amazing. So I remember when I first started with the MS Society, you know, getting their magazine, there wasn't too many medications out there. It was a smaller magazine by then, but now it's grown, and there's just, like I said, the resources are out there. But as terms of the origin of MS, when I first started with the society, they thought it might have been a virus, a canine virus or a feline virus. One thing they did find was that it's very common in our latitude, between 30 and 40 degrees north latitude.
Interesting.
I was always wondering why that was. So I did a little research, and one thought was that maybe the Industrial Revolution back in the 1800s and even the 1700s, with all the pollution in the air and the water, might have been a contributing factor. But MS symptoms have been recorded in the 1300s, 1400s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they found things via autopsy, which I'm not ready for that yet, but the progression of the disease and the history of the disease is interesting.
Well, yeah, that industrial era, that's, you know, nowadays what's called environmental racism, because a lot of asthma and other conditions are due to a lot of times the plants that are, not the green plants, but the plants that are emitting whatever they're emitting into the air, have the more asthma and other types of conditions, you know, help breathing. There was something I was watching the other day on a video, maybe in Brooklyn. It was something to do with a pipeline and the natural gas. And the elder gentleman was saying how a lot of people living in that neighborhood had dealt with, health issues and, breathing and maybe cancers and different stuff. So that's a major issue, and sadly, a lot of times it's out of sight. It's out of sight of nice areas, quote unquote, because it's in areas where minorities are.
Right.
And, there's even a history for Native peoples of the uranium mining in the Southwest, and there's still like open pit uranium mines and all kinds of stuff. So that's a huge topic, which I kind of sidetracked on a little bit, but I think it's an interesting topic. It's the kind of thing, if somebody wrote a book about how the industrial era in the connection with diseases and that kind of thing, that would be a fascinating read, right, if it's not already done.
Right. They even found, which I had read in an article, that people were observing birds flying into trees like they were drunk. And they took some of the bodies and they performed necropsies on, and they found out that the myelin sheath on those birds was missing or damaged. So, like you said, you wonder if it's the environmental component. So as to the origins, they have a catch-all, which is environmental/genetic. Mm-hmm. And we don't know, just don't know. In the book, I ask people to share with your family the history of your health history, because you might find a common denominator in aunts or uncles or grandparents or something that might lead you to trace, where some of these diseases might have been, or, a common thread that maybe some of you might carry on a gene in your family. So I know years ago we weren't allowed to talk about family history, family health, because it was considered very private. And, I encourage people to share information with their family.
Sounds like you have, and there is out there, a nice balance of the kind of scientific and the research angle, and then the like you mentioned, of watching funny movies and stuff, and the emotional and the little the home remedy tricks of the trade, so to speak. Which reminds me too, right, like pretty much right before we went to print, I kept reading about there's no cure, but certain times in esoteric or metaphysical writings I've heard someone mentioned some kind of cure or healing from, whatever, some kind of cancer or serious disease. So I actually got online, and we ended up putting that in the book a little. There was a woman, I'll read what she wrote. It was a woman diagnosed with MS in 1998 at the age of 27. She refused to take any of the then prescribed drugs and began doing yoga. When asked about other life changes she made, she said, "I also did Reiki. I started to learn how to move energy through my body. I learned how to really focus on places in my brain that had plaque. I learned how to pass energy, how to pass good white light energy through my brain to help heal it. People think this is crazy, but it worked for me. That is all I can say." So, that added to the book is just, I wanted to, just put that in, and you obviously agreed with it, that like to think out, think outside the box, and obviously one has to deal with the practical practicalities and the realities of the condition, but to also realize that each person has a choice, and what might work for one person might not work for another.
Right.
That just that sometimes, like you were talking about it, at the age you're at, the medication is not recommended to you. So I think, you know, with anything, I think it's good for anybody to look at the choices and sometimes just trust their own intuition, or in different ways that they can help enhance their life experience, or perhaps even completely heal.
Right. I think there's a spiritual component.
Mm-hmm.
I write in the book that my special time with my husband is Sunday morning. We have a big pancake breakfast, and we'll talk on different topics, and we'll just pick a topic. I feel very close to him. I think there is a spiritual component where you maybe channel your energies, and you focus on the positives. Mm-hmm. Or the mind over matter, just focusing on the positives, I think is a healing process as well. Not only diet and exercise, but I really think it's your state of mind. I did know a lady who very negative, very social, very beautiful. She's now in a wheelchair with her MS. I really stopped talking with her because the negativity, I just felt her negativity. It was, why me? Why did this happen to me? But it was many, many years that she felt this way. She didn't come to grips with it. And I think it was eating her up and making her MS, exacerbating her MS. But I think there's a spiritual component to healing.
Very interesting. And yeah, you also, you're so community-minded too. You decided to include, I think there's probably little vignettes from maybe 10 or close to 20 people. There, you know, some are short, maybe others are a page. What made you want to include, you know, that in your book, just to give a wider perspective?
Yeah, I just, these were people who were very close to me, and I felt a spiritual sense of spirit in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that many of them, which they write about, had gone through some trying times. Actually, it's my favorite part of the book. There's 22 people that I asked to include their words of wisdom, and mm-hmm. was how they would handle a challenge, or what words of wisdom would they offer to someone who's going through a situation. And when you read them, some of the people had some horrible things happen to them, and they've survived. They've come to grips with it. It's painful for them still, but again, they're healing. They're healing from their experiences. And I think people who read the book will find it comforting, because it's about other things besides MS. And maybe the people reading the book will say, hey, you know, I can identify with that, or I can understand how they feel because I feel the same way. And I think that will help people as well. I think I wanted to do that because I think people need to hear from other people besides me who wrote the book. But these were people who were just very special to me.
Well, that, like I told you when we were working on the book, Janet, like that section, as a writer, and I'm kind of always trying to do something a little different or not be cliche in a sense. And that section, like I found it uplifting. And the interesting thing to me too is, like, some of it, and I'm not being critical, I'm just saying, like, to my sense of trying to do innovative things with writing, some of, like, in that section, because, you know, people are sharing, and sometimes it's cliche, like, you know, just keep going and don't give up. But it works. I mean, I got like, you know, the buzz from that section of, like, it was like a reminder to me that sometimes the simplest phrases of just, you know, keep going, don't give up, that kind of thing is what's needed.
Right.
So I found that section very, very inspiring, uplifting, whatever that adjective, and just neat to see. It's like a glimpse into the human condition about how people deal with what's going on. You say at the beginning of the book, you want it to be like you're having coffee with someone, and it's very conversational and very, you know, casually conveyed with the information. And that section with the people writing, it's almost like a view into their kitchen, or, you know, when they're sitting at the table and dealing with whatever they're dealing with,
right,
or the living room. So it's I think that just touches that common, whatever anybody is dealing with. I think adding that, and the overall book, it really touches that common, the human condition that everybody deals with at different
right.
degrees and levels of moods and well-being.
And I think it was good for them, because I think they wanted to, they wanted to tell people their story, which mm-hmm. maybe they didn't get a chance to do. So, you know, collectively, all these people, and a lot of them know each other. So it was good for them, too. It was, you know, good medicine for them, as I say.
All right.
For them to contribute to the book as well.
And then there's also some very playful drawings, artwork, that are done by Kyle Horne, H-O-R-N-E, and the cover is beautiful. It's a bright yellow, and it adds a nice uplift of mood. Yeah, I think artists and people that are different and on the fringe, anybody who's sort of fringe or something, it sometimes feels like they don't quite fit in, which I think your book, the title, A Pear in an Apple Tree, I think it helps to sort of frame the perspective.
Right. I was standing at the sink one day having my toast, and my husband worked nights. I didn't eat very much. I was standing at the sink, and I really wasn't feeling well with my MS, and I just blurted out, I just feel like a pear in an apple tree. It's very odd. And I go, that's where the title came from.
Oh, okay.
Just off the cuff, and just, right. You know, that way. So Kyle was one of my former students, and he's just a lovely young man, just very talented artist. He's written children's books, and so I asked him to do the artwork. He's got little cartoon characters, Ned and Nancy Neuron, in the book. We're working together on a companion book, Mommy is Mizzy Today. It's a children's book about children dealing with MS, which is in the works.
What do you call it? Mizzy, M-I-Z-Z-Y?
Mizzy, yeah, which is MS. We just say Mizzy.
Oh, I see. I learned I didn't even think of that the whole time working on the book.
Yeah. So he did the cover, and we put on the bottom of the tree there. It's called the James Tree. And when we first moved to our house 36 years ago, planted a tree in honor of my son, who was 3 at the time. And I watch this tree grow every year outside my office here in the house. Just been, you know, we let's say, hey, the James tree's doing well today. And the James tree is being, you know, sheltered by the big oak tree. And Kyle had a good time doing the artwork. He's just a very talented young man.
Excellent. And I think also that other thing for people to remember, like mentioned at the beginning of our talk, that that there's all different kind of conditions. You know, I watched my friend Richard when I first met him, and then he started using a cane and ended up in a wheelchair. And so there's different, you might not know from seeing somebody, or you might know. So I think it's just for people that don't have MS to really be open-minded to listen to what's going on with someone, because there's so many phases and different ways that can affect people.
Right. My first thought was after my diagnosis, and I had difficulty dealing with that, was how long is it going to be before I am in a wheelchair? And, you know, I use my cane when I have to, but, you know, you don't know. You just, you don't know day to day. When we had the house built, we actually had the hallway widened in anticipation of a wheelchair. And I said, it's not happening. If it happens in the future, as I say in the book, I want a bubblegum pink conversation piece and a work of art. And, it hasn't happened, but I have my canes and so on. So it affects people differently. It's stress brings on exacerbation. So, again, that's trying to be calm and rational.
Right.
And being spiritual helps as well.
All right. Well, yeah, may you continue with your upbeat and busyness to, avoid to avoid troubles and maximize your life experience, which you are just admirable. I admire that quality about you. Kind of going to wrap it up soon. The one thing I can relate to as far as when you mentioned the nerves, I remember pinching a nerve maybe like 10 or 15 years ago, and it was down by my sacrum.
Oh.
And it was just like, oh my God, I would reach for something. I wouldn't feel any pain, but then I would reach for something in the kitchen cabinet, and I literally, the first week, I would literally scream because it was like, so the power of the nerves is, there's a lot going on there that's sort of under the radar. So,
right.
I don't know how that relates to MS, if it does, but it did show me just how intense the nerves are.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and we have to be good to our bodies. We abuse our bodies in a lot of ways, whatever it is, and whether it's food or alcohol or drugs, even over-exercise. We have to be good to our bodies, because all aspects, your brain, too, and what you you put in your body affects all parts of your body, whether it's your nerves, your brain, blood, whatever. So we have to be good to it.
All right. Yeah. So thanks so much, Janet. And I know you were planning some of book signing events in the works, so people can check back or reach out if they want to find out. And the book is available. People that know you can get it from you, or they can get it through my website. Anything you want to add?
I just want to thank you very much, because with your guidance and help, you've made me see things in a different light, whether it's the words or phrases, and the whole process has been wonderful. You've made the journey wonderful, so I want to thank you for that.
Oh, you're quite welcome, and nice to hear. And definitely a team effort. Literally, without so many people. With the artwork and all the people you asked to participate, and your husband and son, and on and on. So it's really, what is that saying? It takes a village to raise a child. I guess it kind of takes a village to make a book, basically.
Right.
Yeah. So keep on keeping on, Janet. And thank you so much for putting into words. I truly think it's going to help people in ways I don't know, because it's an area or a topic I'm not that familiar with, but I just think because of the nature of the book itself, it's going to help people with MS, or even if they don't have it. So thank you for writing.
Thank you, Monk.
All right. You take care.